the reason I'm not good at 3D printing is the same reason why I didn't finish my engineering degree. It's basically just I can't be that obsessive and that detail-oriented with everything all the time. A little bit more artsy, a little bit more slapdash. I think there's more fun ways to fabricate things that requires less money and less torture.
Like making a podcast?
Yeah. Ooh, we should make a podcast.
Let's make a podcast.
You sound thrilled about the idea.
Let's make a podcast.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I am one of your hosts, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
And I'm your other host, Jessica Michaels, and I use she, they.
And today we're talking about the neurobiological association between ADHD and obesity, which I was not aware was a thing. Basically, as you know much more about this than I do. I just watched a handful of videos and read some stuff.
Well, I sent you, because I didn't know, I know a lot about weight struggles, a lot, from personal experience. And I know about neurodiversity and ADHD from personal experience. I did not know, I suspected that there was a link, but I felt like it was primarily behavioral. I didn't realize that there was a neurochemical link. And so I sent you a video that I had watched by the, it's the Healthy Gamer channel on YouTube. And he is a psychiatrist and a former monk. And so listening to it, it was one of those things where it was like, oh, this explains a lot. And so I sent it to you because you're more science-y out of the two of us. So I thought you might understand the science better than I did. But I also was hoping it would give some clarity, you know, or some understanding, just because this is not an issue you have had to deal with. And it's an issue I've dealt with every day since I was 8. So I thought it might be a good thing to listen to.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess a quick bit of a trigger warning. We will be discussing some disordered eating in this podcast. So if that's something that you struggle with or really are feeling too sensitive to deal with today, you can go ahead and skip this episode and go to the next one.
And disclaimer, of course, we are not medical professionals. We're not going to go as much into the exact neurochemistry of the link between ADHD and neurodiversity, but we will include the link to the YouTube episode of Healthy Gamer so that you can take a listen for yourself. But I'm very interested, Ellie, in you explaining to me your understanding of what that whole thing was, because at some point in time, my brain just, it took a Viking and came back and was like, Ellie will explain this to me in words I understand.
Well, to begin with, first of all, my struggles with eating and whatnot have been kind of the opposite end, where it's always been very difficult for me to eat. It's just always been a thing. I was always underweight. I was always undersized. Once I got on hormone replacement therapy, I can suddenly eat and I'm hungry like all the time because hormones go brr. But the gist that I got from this video was that individuals with ADHD, we have a stronger craving for food and we have issues with impulse management and impulse resistance. And then we have a weaker reward response from eating food. So neurotypical person sees a candy bar, they get 5 units of desire. And then they eat the candy bar and they get 5 or 6 units of fulfillment. And it kind of levels out that way. Where neurodivergent person, or specifically ADHD person, sees the candy bar and we get 7.5 units of desire. And then we eat the candy bar and we only get 2.5 units of satiation or satisfaction back from it. And then if you add into that emotional dysregulation, where we feel feelings stronger, but not just stronger, but for longer. And this was definitely a thing that I've noticed, is that since starting on HRT and getting better ADHD medicine, emotions used to just last all freaking day, or for days and days and days and days. And now it's much more like I hear it always explained in the, you know, the books I read and the Buddhism lectures that I listen to, of like, the emotion shows up, I feel it for a little while, and then it goes away. And it's not exactly on their like 2 minute schedule. It's more like, you know, 10, 20 minutes, but it's not all day. So when you have this emotional dysregulation, when you have these stronger emotions that last for longer, one of our impulses is to try and self-medicate in some way and try to self-regulate, because just straight up self-regulating doesn't work. We need to search for something as an external. And so one of the ways that we can do that is food. And that food works as a self-regulating mechanism, but it doesn't work as well. So if you're sad and you have ADHD and you want some pudding, one pudding cup won't make you not sad. You need two or three, because we get that lower amount of satiation, or that lower amount of satisfaction response from eating the thing. And it's like so many other things that are ADHD or autism related. It looks like a willpower issue, and which is often, you know, translated to not trying hard enough, or just not being good enough, or being lazy, or not being dedicated. And it's like, no, it's a biochemical problem. It's not that I don't want to do the thing. I want desperately to do the thing. I just can't get myself to do the thing. And it looks like I'm sitting on the couch playing on my phone, because that's technically what I'm doing. But in my head, I'm screaming at myself to get up and do the thing. And so, again, looks like lazy is actually a biochemical limitation of this quirk of how our nervous systems are set up differently than neurotypical or... what was that term from the other day from that interview?
Neuromajority?
Yeah, neuromajority. Yeah, it's this weird quirk of how our systems are set up and how they work. Yeah, at least for me, that translated into just food never being satisfying. Like, the craving was there, but also cravings in general were pretty muted. Like, if I really wanted, like, a Lego set, I could go stand in the Lego aisle and look at it all for a while. And I go, ooh, I really want the thing. And then a few minutes later, like, I don't care.
Yeah, I feel like your ADHD manifests itself less in compulsive and impulsive behaviors than mine does.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was also the crushing depression that made me not really want things and not feel satisfaction in getting things.
So you're, I think, also that compounded. Physically very ill for several years.
Well, just most of my life. So how has that translated in your experience? How's that shown up for you? In what way did this blow your mind?
One of the things that he mentioned was that when they are testing things like weight loss drugs, or any type of weight loss medicine or pharmacology or lifestyle recommendations, people with ADHD are excluded specifically from studies. And we already know that women are often excluded from studies, or not studied nearly as much as men. We know that studies primarily or exclusively focus on cisgendered people in addition. So there's already several factors that are working against neurodiverse people who are either non-binary or trans. There's just a lot of things that are blocked out of these studies, but never really focused on again in most cases. And I just look at my own experience. You know, the first time I knew that I had a problem with my weight was, I was about 8. And my dad told me that he would pay for me to go to Weight Watchers. And I didn't know what Weight Watchers was. I didn't know what weight was. I didn't know what being fat was. I didn't know any of that. And then we, because of me being fat as a kid, we collectively as a family were changing our eating habits. So it meant that, you know, none of the junk food things or anything, or even like the good dinners, because we had like five dinners that we'd eat in rotation, because my mom is good at many things. Cooking is not necessarily one of her strongest suits or her favorite things. So we had a couple of meals that we would eat kind of in rotation, and suddenly the fried chicken went away and, you know, some of the stuff that we really liked. And it was because we as a family had new eating habits to help me. And
I'm sure that didn't add any guilt or externalization, or certainly no kind of lifelong complex at all was derived from that. Yeah, no.
Well, I look back and at the time, you know, my mom, and that didn't last very long, by the way, changing everybody's eating habits for your elementary school age daughter didn't really take. And so we would go to Sam's and my mom would get like these giant boxes of tortilla chips where they had like two industrial sized bags in them. I think they were meant for restaurants. And a bottle of squeeze cheese, which I think kicked off my love of cheese flavored product. I love a cheese sauce that can't be called either cheese or a sauce, because it's so far away from those things.
And not just always chemicals. Food.
Oh, wonderful. So I would just eat. My mom would just, you know, I was old enough to sort of function on my own a lot of the time. So they didn't really pay attention to me. So I would just eat chips and cheese for hours, because I never had an off or a full. I don't think I've felt full of my entire life. And that is something that I always noticed, is that as I grew up, is that other people could eat less of something than me and be done, whether it was Doritos or a, you know, piece of cake or whatever. And I never got that, because like, how can you be done? Because when I get a craving, or when I'm eating, the impulse to keep eating isn't like, oh, yeah, I could keep eating. It's like a drive. It's like a motor in my mind that would just keep grinding forward. So even if I, you know, put away the stuff or threw it in the trash can or, you know, whatever to get myself to stop, if I'm mid craving, I will get the stuff out of the trash can and I will eat it. There's nothing that is going to stop me from eating the thing. And that was one of the things that struck me about it, is that because of the way we feel emotions differently, our cravings can be worse and longer lasting, and then it takes much more of whatever it is to satisfy that craving. And I have always, to me, that's always been a willpower issue. You know, I'm just a shameful person, you know, or I'm, you know, who does stuff like that, you know?
Well, clearly it's that you're a bad person, you don't try hard enough, and you lack moral fiber. And certainly not that there's a specific hormone that's not present in sufficient amounts for your brain to switch from one state to another. Mm-hmm. You should just be able to white knuckle and get through it. Like depression or ADHD. Well, you just need to focus better and try harder, right?
And then, you know, every doctor that I've ever been to has talked to me about my weight to the almost the exclusion of anything else, regardless of what I was there to be seen for. And, you know, they'd give you the printouts and they would say, okay, you know, you eat chicken and salad, and like stuff that I knew. It's not that my problem wasn't that, one, I didn't know that I was fat. So anybody who has, you know, made it a point on the internet to point that out to me, or heckling me as a comedian, because that's what they say to female comics, is they say that you're fat. They don't say you're not funny. They say you're fat. I always knew very much that I had a weight issue. I would go to Weight Watchers with my grandma, and it was so cute. They gave me my own little card to track my progress and everything, because it was adorable, and they would weigh me. And I knew, like, even then I knew what healthy food was and wasn't. I did think that sugar-free things were healthy. That was a big thing then at that time, was, you know, like snack walls and stuff like that. But I knew at any point, I knew what was healthy and not healthy. I knew that I was overweight. I knew I needed to exercise. So like getting repeatedly told these things wasn't helpful, and almost triggered like a pathological demand avoidance reaction, you know, because it's like, I know all of these things, but that is impossible to think about when there is one driving thought in your head that will not go away. Even when they said, oh yeah, just don't have the junk food in your house. Bitch, I have a car. I will drive to wherever I need to go. You know, it's like, I never understood, you know, the way they talked about cravings is, oh, take a walk, or, oh, you know, have a carrot or whatever. And those things, those to-dos that they gave me never even came close to touching the situation that I was dealing with, which was, of course, something I internalized. And that led to a lot of really unhealthy life choices that I made. So like, yeah, the impulsivity, the compulsion, the strength of, you know, cravings, the lack of reward or lessened reward, and just this idea that you could very simply eat salad instead of, you know, instead of Dorito Cool Ranch, you know, Cool Ranch Doritos, just never worked for me, no matter how many times people told me that that was all I needed to do. And then it was listen to your body. Well, I'm an autistic with interoception issues, you know, like listening to the hunger signals. To me, every minute of the day, every emotion to me feels like hunger. Nothing feels like being full. And so that never worked for me either, you know, so I would count calories or whatever and get very far into bad situations with all of that, you know, with all of that. So yeah, it definitely struck a chord.
I don't know. It feels like I'm actually very impulsive, but not terribly impulsive.
What's an example of an impulsive behavior, you think, for you?
I don't know. Everything is so much different than it was just a few years ago. I mean, back when I smoked cigarettes, even now people will talk about like, oh, they got a little bit of like a head rush or whatever from smoking. And I'm like, I never got any of that. Like, I just suddenly felt slightly less awful. Because in general, I just always felt kind of awful. And trying to fix that was like this ongoing search for anything. And usually that would end with vodka, because then after a while, I just didn't care. It wasn't necessarily that like I felt great or I felt better. It's not like, ooh, I feel full. It's like, oh, the craving, the desire for fixing whatever it is that's wrong, this ethereal thing that's impossible to nail down, that's just gone away a bit.
Because I think for me, impulsive things are like online shopping, or are eating something, you know, eating half a sheet cake or whatever. Like those are impulsive things. Compulsive things are still things that you are driven to do, but they're not necessarily like instant gratification kind of things. They're not like, you know, gambling. They might be like, I don't know, flying across the country to meet somebody that you met on the internet, or getting married after like a couple of weeks of knowing somebody and moving across the country with them, or you know.
It was like a full month by then.
So they're like things that don't make any sense, but they're just like I went to college. I picked my college based on the fact that I didn't want to get lost at college. Like, I don't have a sense of direction. So I picked a college that was one building because I didn't want to walk. I thought if I needed to walk to different buildings, I'd get lost. Now, had any adult in my life asked me why I picked a college, I think perhaps they could have pointed out some things to me that would have helped me, you know, not make that my only criteria for where to go to school. But that was the decision I made. So to me, that is a compulsive decision. An impulsive decision is like, you know, my brain says, do this thing, and it's the only thing I can think about, and I'm going to do that thing because that's the only thing that will make me happy.
Mm-hmm. I picked my school because I saw a cool commercial for it at some point, and then it aligned with the desires of the micromanaging and abusive people who ran my life at the time. So I'm like, oh, this will get me not yelled at? Okay, yeah, we're going to go with this.
You know, one of the things that they talked about on the YouTube episode too is that ADHD makes obesity worse, and obesity makes ADHD worse because fat cells in your body, I always thought of them as just, you know, little storage spaces, but that they're really hormone releasing agents in your body. And the more of them there are, the worse your ADHD symptoms get. And then, of course, your ADHD symptoms are worse. And so the bigger problems with your weight you have.
Uh-huh.
And then it tied back into, there's a podcast called Maintenance Phase that I absolutely love. The Michael Hobbs Extended Universe. Michael Hobbs is a fantastic podcaster. They, on that show, talk a lot about like weight loss, you know, different diets and different theories about weight loss. And they go back and research the history and the actual studies that were done. And one of the things that they've talked about is that the more you, every time you yo-yo diet or every time you diet, you're messing with your metabolism. Uh-huh. And so at this point, because I've had multiple times where I've swung 60 pounds in one direction or the other, not done healthily when I have lost it. Every time that happens, it damages your metabolism. And so ultimately then your body gets to a point where it needs so few calories to get itself to homeostasis, but then an even smaller amount of calories to actually lose weight. So basically every time you go through that process, it makes it harder and harder and harder to lose weight. And if you think of me doing that since I was 8, I mean, that's darn near 40 years of this. And it's been constant. It's been constant. There's not a day in my life that I haven't thought about my weight. You know, it's never gone away. And so then you add in the fact that in order to lose weight, because I did work with a nutritionist, and the nutritionist had basically said, you know, at this point in your life, you would need to be between, you know, 1,000 and 1,200 calories a day to stay where you are and lose a little bit of weight. But if you think about then with ADHD and your symptoms being made much stronger, and those cravings and those, you know, the lack of interpretation of body signals and the lower satisfaction and satiety feeding in. But at the same time, I would need to eat less and less and less and less and less to lose weight. And the drive to do so is worse and worse and worse and worse and worse every time. That kind of in combination really resonated with me. That's one of the things that I wish they had talked about is kind of the gender issues with weight, because, you know, all the weight loss stuff tends to be directed more at women than men.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is part of it too, because this is just focused on the neurochemistry of ADHD and obesity. It doesn't mention anything about societal pressures, peer pressure, fat shaming, you know, by being even the smallest presence on the internet or daring to go out in public. It doesn't address pressure to stay or be attractive for somebody that you've married to be attracted to you for the rest of your life. There are all of these factors that are psychological that compound, that are made worse, I think, by autism and ADHD, but then just by being who you are, to throw that into the mix is, you know, it just seems like there's so much. And people who talk to you about losing weight make it very simple. They make it very simple. They really think that you just don't know. That the answer is you're stupid, or you don't read, or have never tried anything. All they need to do is tell you to do this and this and this, and that's the answer, and that they need to do that. They need to tell you these things because it will help you. Because if they're not telling you things, if checkers in line at Target aren't criticizing what you're buying at the store, you know, at the grocery store, like I've, you know, had to defend my purchases to cashiers, you know, and saying, oh, this is for my wife. This isn't for me. This is for my wife. Or, oh, you know what, these little Pepsis I buy, this is for when I get migraines. This isn't just what I drink all the time. People really feel like if they don't tell you these things, that you won't know. And they're helping you. And it's just so much. It's just so much. It's just so much altogether. And the one thing in my life that I would want to do is lose weight. That would make my life so much easier. That would make it easier to get a job. We know that statistically. It would make it easier for me to get promoted. We know that from statistics as well. There are numerous studies that show that people who are overweight have more challenging careers and don't get promoted and don't get hired as often because you're seen as unprofessional or seen as lazy, not seen as smart.
Couple of things I wanted to throw in there just because we name dropped Maintenance Phase and Michael Hobbs and whatnots. And there's a few things that I've learned from that podcast that are very much kind of mind blowy. One of them is that, so like years ago, Neil deGrasse Tyson can be kind of a prick, can be also kind of funny. He tweeted, if a physicist made a diet book, it would be consume fewer calories than you exert or whatever. And that was a joke because that's a physics term. And lots of people on the internet took that seriously because lots of people on the internet constantly go, oh, if you want to lose weight, just fewer calories and fewer calories.
Calories in, calories out.
And it's like, first of all, that's a disingenuous argument. That's Michael Hobbs always says it's like saying, well, you know, you could diet like this. And the person goes, well, the Titanic sank in 1908. What? That's got nothing to do with this. So you're claiming that did not happen? Oh, you're denying science and facts here. It's like, okay, yes, that is the very simplified version of how this works, except we're talking about human behavior. And also the body is not a basic machine where you put in a quarter and a quarter's worth of stuff happens.
I'll still take a quarter though.
Yeah, no.
I'm on unemployment at the moment. So if anybody's got a quarter laying around, send it this way. It's all good.
Speaking of, you might want to check out our Patreon.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's not as simple as calories in, calories out, because we know about things like epigenetics, and we know about things about like how hormones can affect how your body processes calories and how it retains fat adipose and
adipose,
you know,
tissue.
There's this ongoing kind of difference of opinion in the transgender community of, should I lose weight before I go on HRT? Because supposedly it's easier to lose weight with a testosterone dominant system than it is with an estrogen dominant system. And that's kind of true, but it's also not true at all. Because once you have the appropriate hormone balance and dominance within your body, your executive function goes up, your metabolism works better, and you find yourself able to better self-regulate. So, you know, it's the constant refrain of transitioning didn't solve all my problems, it made my problems seem worth solving. And yes, having an estrogen-based system changes the way that you retain different amounts of water and fat and salt and whatever, but it's also different. It's not necessarily just better. And so we have this very binary thing about like, oh, you're gaining weight or you're losing weight. And it's like, no, there's like 8,000 different settings in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if you keep putting your body through these cycles of bomb and burst, burst and bomb, or, you know, famine and surplus, your body's going to think that you regularly go through times of famine. And so it's going to hold on to as much as it can in preparation for that next period of famine. Because at a, you know, biophysical level, we are apes with, you know, hats. So it's hugely complicated. And
just so you know, I'm picturing a Weight Watchers meeting right now with apes in various hats. Sitting mm-hmm. around in the talking circle, and it that would have made those meetings so much better for me, really.
I mean, things like, you know, depending on your hormonal balance, the way that, from like an evolutionary biology standpoint, and a lot of that's just kind of guesswork and whatever, but it's a good general framework to look at things from a purely biological standpoint, is pretend you're a hunter-gatherer, or pretend you're an ape and try to figure out when your body would be exposed to these things. And the only way that you're really going to get a large dose of straight-up sugar, of glucose, as a hunter-gatherer or as an ape wandering around is ripe fruit. And ripe fruit is a very fleeting thing. It's not going to be there in a month. It might not be there in a couple days. And so we have this reaction to ripe fruit, to glucose, to sugar, of get as much as you can, because sugar is a very, very effective caloric transfer tool. That's what breast milk is. It's mostly sugar and some fat. And because you're wanting to dump as many calories into the baby as you can. And so your body goes, ooh, look, here's this gigantic source of calories. Let's get as much of it as we can before it all goes away. But we don't live like that anymore, and that's not the environment we're in anymore. So instead of needing to pound through this fruit because it's going to be gone tomorrow, you find yourself eating half a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Because those hormones, those methods of your body thinking for you, are not built for these kinds of scenarios.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much that factors into this that we haven't even touched. We haven't talked about age. We haven't talked about insulin resistance. We haven't talked about processed foods and how, you know, companies actually engineer foods to be more appealing / addictive. We mm-hmm. haven't even touched any of those things. And tie into that other neurodiversity things like autism texture related food aversions, or diseases like ARFID, where you actually have intense food aversions. You know, there are certain things that I can't eat because of the texture. Like chicken is hit or miss for me. I am just as easy to be able to enjoy a chicken dinner as I am to not be able to swallow a bit of chicken. And so that's why for a lot of us, processed foods are better, because they're always uniform in texture. I know what I'm getting in taste and texture.
Uh-huh.
So, and how does that work? Fast food and in processed food is that uh-huh. consistency. I can go to McDonald's anywhere and I know what a hamburger tastes like, because apparently I'm the only one in the world that orders hamburgers. I didn't know this till somebody the other day went to pick me up a hamburger and actually was like, so do I just ask for like a hamburger or like a plain hamburger? But just ask for a hamburger. Apparently nobody gets hamburgers but me. They all get
cheeseburgers. No, we all get cheeseburgers.
So yeah, I'm weird. So there's so many things that go into this, but there is some good news. I know this has been doom and gloom for fascinating doom. I guess there
Have
is
you
some
seen
good
the
news.
Quality of this doom?
The first bit of good news is this isn't your fault. which is the constant theme. That is the tagline of our podcast. This isn't your fault. You're not lazy. You're not stupid. This is not your fault. There have been so many things working against you, and the things that are easy for other people are not necessarily easy for you. The things that they're describing about the way they experience life, you may have similar experiences, but the way your brain feels them is intensely different. So you've had bigger challenges, the levels of, you know, the things that you do to be successful aren't as effective. Like, it's not your fault. Now, that doesn't change the fact that we do often need to lose weight to be healthy. You know, you need to have the right blood triglycerides in order to stay on your hormones, and you need to keep your blood pressure down to stay on your hormones. So there are reasons that we do want to, in some way, shape, or form, a lot of us, to manage our weight. And if you don't, go for it. There was like 3 months where I was like, my wife loves me no matter what, so I just don't even care anymore. I'm just going to eat what I want and not worry about weight, which with ADHD now I know is really dangerous to do because of all of these things we've talked about. And yes, I put on a ton of weight, but God, was that great. So if you are able to live your life in a way where you do not have to think about this, savor it, you know, because that is amazing. And if it's just not your choice not to deal with this or not to make this a priority in your life, then it's not a priority in your life. You know, like, do whatever makes sense for you and whatever makes your life manageable and livable and as happy as you can make it. The good news is that if you are somebody who struggles with both obesity and ADHD, if you treat your ADHD effectively, it has a positive effect on obesity or the things that cause obesity. So if you have always focused on weight, and you have ADHD, maybe this is a time to really prioritize your ADHD treatment and management and your emotional regulation management, because work on your emotional regulation can benefit the things that cause obesity. Getting your ADHD under control can do the same thing. And on the flip side of that, if you are somebody who has an obesity issue and you really work on getting your weight under control, because then again, you're not going to have all of those hormone producing bodies in your system. But the more work you do on your weight, that can have a positive effect on your ADHD. So there are multiple ways to tackle these challenges. The doctor on Healthy Gamer also mentioned that you can't necessarily focus on the satiety signals that they tell you to focus on when, you know, they tell neurotypical people to focus on. That doesn't necessarily work for us, but you do have the stretch receptors in your stomach, so you can still sense whether your stomach has stretched or not, which is an alternate way to detect fullness. So eat food that causes your stomach to stretch, you know, so lots of high fiber things. And so, you know, this is certainly not, we're not going to get into how to lose weight. I would recommend going anywhere but this podcast, honestly. Like, this is not the show, but I do want to leave with an element of hope, which is none of this stuff has worked for you because it was never gonna. It was never gonna work for you. But that's okay. And it's not your fault. And there are things you can do. So if this is a major concern for you, then there may be some light at the end of that tunnel that isn't a train. And that is not always the case. So it's pretty awesome. So I actually left that whole discussion very optimistic. And exercise is the thing that they keep coming back to. And exercise is great for ADHD. Exercise is good for depression. Exercise is good for so many things. And it helps in this case too. So they're just, if people have told you to only focus on your diet and don't focus on exercise to lose weight, well, now we've got some other information coming to us, which is for this subset of people, exercise is really going to be beneficial. So you don't have to listen to those people. So it's been, I left the discussion or the episode feeling quite good. And so hopefully we can share that with other people to feel good as well, for this or any other reason. Just, you know, feel good, be happy, whatever you can do to lift things up. Hopefully not a pack of cookies, but if it is, man, enjoy them. God, Thin Mints. Oh, Oreos. Oreo mint that tastes like Thin Mints. Okay.
Well, if you'd like to lift us up and help us feel good, you can rate and review our show on Apple Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and then tell your friends about it. Find us on YouTube at Gifted Kid Messy Adult. Subscribe and hit the notification bell. Leave a comment. That's something, you know, not horrible. And if you'd like to support us financially, you can check us out on Patreon at Coach Jessica Michaels, where you get access to behind the scenes stuff, some extra bonus nonsense, and all kinds of resources for neurodiversity support and how to support your own or other people's neurodiversity journey.
Yeah, including there, if you check the tiers now, we do have the neurodiverse professionals community that's going to be opening up towards the end of this month. If you're listening to this in April of 2024, you'll be, and so by participating in Patreon, you will get a complimentary membership to the neurodiverse professionals community, which is a $500 value, which isn't bad for a couple of bucks a month. So check that out for sure. And then everything that is happening in the Gifted Kid Messy Adult world can be found at my website, coachjessicamichaels.com, including information on coaching and a great set of media and other resources.
And if you'd like to find me or have me do some video production for you, you can find me at lemichaelsproductions.com. I don't have to be near you to film stuff. You can film it yourself. I'll just do the editing and the producing and the whatever else has to be done. But do, you know, also hire me for filming, because that's the fun part. But I think that'll just about wrap it up for this episode of Gifted Kid Messy Adult. Take care of each other out there.